This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Teams. When there's more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team.
Punt. Punt. Halftime.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
It's like peeing in the bathtub.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Enjoy it.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
You're hearing on the other side of the line of scrimmage the defense calling out your plays?
Watch out for this. Watch out for that.
Today's guests, NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell, ESPN college football analyst Desmond Howard, WWE superstar The Miz, plus co-host of Peacock's Brother from Another, Michael Smith. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, look, that's why TJ didn't get invited to the Masters. A tradition unlike any other, which is TJ Jefferson starting off the Rich Eisen Show on Peacock with a putt on our putting surface. This is another tradition unlike any other that is going down right now in the middle of November. Yes. Thank you, Mike Del Tufo. It is that time to just listen to the birds chirping.
Oh, baby.
I can't play the theme, Rich.
And Chris Brockman, good to see you here today.
Hey, Rich
on a
Eisen,
Masters Thursday
you?
in the middle of November, man.
Are we whispering and talking?
No, you know what? It's okay. That's my combine voice.
TJ's in his
and
chair.
Here's Bryson DeChambeau getting ready to run his 40-yard dash after a disappointing three-cone drill. We've got the Masters going on, everybody.
I would love to know DeChambeau's 40.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Well, we know what he did in the weight and reps room, to use a combine phrase. Unfortunately, on occasion so far today, his drives have been more horizontal than vertical.
Man.
Right?
Snap hooks.
What
all
is
over
going
the place.
On? So where do we stand right now?
Okay,
by the way,
so,
welcome to Rich Eisen Show. We're watching the Masters leaderboard over the next 3 hours, talking a ton of football. But I just wanted to get what's going on right now. The Masters currently being led by a Scheffler, and then there's a Shoffley. There's a Scheffler-Shoffley situation going on right now.
And a Westwood.
Scotty Scheffler is 3 under par, and so is Lee Westwood. And Xander Schauffele, one of 6 players at 2 under par. And if you heard yesterday, Scott Van Pelt was saying DeChambeau, pump the brakes on him being the main name you'll be hearing around here this week. And he dropped Xander Schauffele's name instead. Mm. And he's now 2 under. But you've been checking things out, because as you know, it's a digital streaming world. That we're here on Peacock. You were watching some of the streaming of the Masters already this morning while I was prepping
morning.
For the program.
Yeah,
what is going
groups.
On with DeChambeau?
All right, so DeChambeau hit his tee shot on 13. He started on 10.
Okay.
Into the straw on the right, then hit it OB over the green.
He nuked it.
And took a double on 13, so he's +2 right now.
Okay.
He did just bomb his drive on 15, so he's in good shape.
Well, 15, 13, and 15. So he doubled one of the par fives.
Doubled one of the par fives.
Those are the ones where people like him could make hay, where
right.
you're firing a dart from like, what, a buck, based on his abilities, like a buck 20 in. You're just trying to drop one in the
like
right
that.
Part of the green to try and eagle a hole.
He's shooting wedge into these par fives. Mm-hmm. He was trying to play the par fives as par fours. Make the course par 67
right.
this week. That's his goal, obviously. But
so he's just 2 over. That's not
two
that
over.
Bad.
Yeah, he's
okay.
He's fine.
So we'll keep an eye on all of that here as it is Masters Thursday in November. That is a 2020 storyline. But we're seeing it. It'll be an exciting weekend. And the NFL weekend begins tonight, as we always know. Week 10 in the NFL begins this evening with a huge game in Tennessee, a just huge game in Tennessee. These are the two teams that are going to be battling it out. I mean, in the AFC South, and this is the beginning of rubber meeting the road as we have turned the page from the first half of the season. Knock on wood, if you're with me, we've made it. And I know it's week 10, and there's 17 weeks in the NFL, but this is the first week in which every single team enters having played at least half of their schedule. As we know, the Steelers are 8-0. We know again, that the Packers and Seahawks are 6-2. One team that's Super Bowl worthy for sure has played 9 games. That would be your bye week in Kansas City Chiefs, sitting there at 8-1 on their bye week. So now is the time where we're beginning to see what is what in the NFL. Who is entering this second half of the season on an upswing? Who needs to take the considerable steps to get back into things? Who needs to just duplicate what they've done? And suddenly they're looking at a season that they haven't provided to their fan base in a while. Cleveland Browns coming off of their bye week this week at 5-3, taking on the Houston Texans in the Brock Osweiler Bowl.
Nice.
I mean, I'm trying to connect any other tissue between Cleveland and Houston, and it's Brock Osweiler. As we recall, Cleveland and Houston pulled off a very NBA-like trade, sending Osweiler and his tons of salaries away.
So much salary.
Okay. And Cleveland basically gets back, sending nothing to Houston.
Was that the first?
Houston sent a big, huge salary and draft choices to somebody to take him.
Should that have been the first sign that Bill O'Brien was kind of like not really sure what he's doing? Because didn't he sign Osweiler to that $60 million deal without
sight unseen,
without seeing him, without working
him
out?
Yes.
Yeah. That should have been the first sign.
Well, there's a lot going on in Houston right now. We're wondering what the cultural fit actually is right there.
Unreal.
But Cleveland against Houston right now, I mean, they win this game. They're 6-3, and they have a shot, significant shot, at making the playoffs this year. Right? The Chicago Bears enter this week at 5-4. If they pull off this win against the Minnesota Vikings, 6-4, heading off into their final 6 games above 500. Or do they go in at 500 in their final 6 games? The Chicago Bears have a bye week, after which the Green Bay Packers are sitting right there. This is a huge rubber meets the road moment for Chicago. The Las Vegas Raiders are 5-3, taking on the Denver Broncos this week before taking on the Kansas City Chiefs in a Sunday night football game. They have an opportunity to sweep the Chiefs. Raiders have an opportunity to make some considerable hay in the second half of this season. Another team that comes into the second half of the season on a nice little uptick after getting beat up by, you know, their division rival. Well, I know it was they didn't get pounded by the division rival like, say, the Buccaneers did. But there's the Baltimore Ravens coming into this week, Sunday Night Football, and we had Lamar Jackson on the show yesterday. And the Ravens are on Sunday night against the New England Patriots. Apparently, what Lamar had to say on this show made some rounds yesterday, Chris.
Did he say something controversial?
Well, I mean, it was surprising, let's put it that way.
Definitely was surprising. We both kind of looked at each other.
We have had moments here on this show where somebody says something, and I do want to say this. You know, I don't make metrics, or I don't make figurative pelts on my professional wall. I don't do that sort of thing. And I don't criticize players for giving sound bites that everyone wonders why they would say something like that or what it would mean. I don't, you know, I prefer a player to be talkative and talk as if there is no microphone here and no sense that the rest of the world could possibly see it. That's the, you know, I don't say, why in the hell would he say something? So I don't do that sort of thing, but there are times when somebody says something that is surprising, and I'll look at you, you'll look at me, and we'll be like, okay, that was something. Because very rarely do you hear a quarterback, when asked why things look a little bit tougher this year than the year before, giving an answer like Lamar Jackson did yesterday, that defenses are calling out their plays. Here was the exchange I had with Lamar Jackson yesterday. It just, from the eye test, it looks like things aren't coming as easy for you this year. Is that a safe way to look at it, that things
I feel, you know, it's a lot of with schemes. You know, we're going against defenses. They calling out our plays, stuff like that. Like, they know what we're doing. So a lot of that, you know, sometimes, you know, stuff won't go our way if they beat us to the punch.
So you're hearing on the other side of the line of scrimmage the defense calling out your plays?
That's what they definitely do. Like, runs, stuff like that. Watch out for this, watch out for that. Sometimes that's what's going on.
So how do you combat that, Lamar?
So I guess we're going to halftime and let Coach, you know, let us know what he sees upstairs,
mm-hmm.
and we just go from there.
Well, I'm hoping that from here on out that this can actually help Lamar Jackson in terms of running a little bit of an okey-doke. New England can start screaming out, run, 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 and if it's a run, let him just pull out of center or take it and just throw it. Go audible. Go Omaha on people. Just switch things up.
Let it rip to Hollywood Brown.
Because you'll hear Ravens fans have been saying all year long, it sure looks like everybody's on to us this year.
Mm-hmm.
That the exotic smash mouth that we saw that Tennessee was running and that the Ravens were essentially bringing into vogue last year, or as soon as, you know, Lamar took the reins away from Jets starter Joe Flacco, that he was now putting a ton of stuff on tape that everyone was being able to figure out, and that despite a whole host of weapons, I mean, the number of times a Raven will grab a pass from Lamar or take a handoff from Lamar that's different from the snap before, or is definitely someone you don't have on your fantasy team because you didn't even know the hell they played for the Baltimore Ravens. They really do have a ton of talented weapons at the disposal of Lamar. It just doesn't seem that they ever can push the pedal to the metal and come back from a 14-point deficit. And sometimes if they fall into a 14-point deficit, it's because it looks like everything that you've seen before over the last few weeks, and it's becoming predictable. That might be an answer. I don't believe they lost to the Steelers because they were predictable. I don't think they lost to the Steelers is because they were too careless with the football and maybe too predictable when it was third and fourth and short and Lamar was taking it himself. But that was definitely surprising when you hear a quarterback basically say they're calling out our plays. They might not be calling out, again, as you heard, hey, this is exactly where they're going to go with the ball in between the A-gap and whatever, or calling out their play by actual name, but run pass because that's their tendency. And also, they might be running the offense too similarly than the last time that they faced a team, or putting enough stuff on tape or film. But that was surprising, and I would definitely look to see how this plays out against New England as we talked to Kyle Brandt yesterday, and I told him, hey, about an hour ago, this is what Lamar said to me, and he's like, wow, of all teams that you want to face, here comes New England. And last year, it sure didn't look like New England knew what plays were coming. They had no idea what was hitting them. What a backdrop to this Sunday night football game. And I do want to thank Lamar for coming on this show. I'm not taking it and using it as content the next day for any other reason other than the fact that it is newsworthy and everyone else seems to be talking about it because they saw it on a radio TV show. We see who courtesies us. The eye in the Rich Eisen Show sky is always on.
I think that's me because I was.
By the way, you have
clips.
Been on fire, man. You are texting us. I mean, the TJ Jefferson television has been getting a lot of videos taken of it lately, and they've been sending it to everyone. You are on it.
I'm watching, man.
You are out there watching all the sports shows, making sure they are given the courtesy mention.
Squad goals.
I figure I got to earn my keep around here. You
TJ
know what
standards and practices Jefferson is on fire right now.
S&P.
S&P.
TJ S&P Jefferson.
You know, we're just going to make sure you're doing things the right way, people.
Thank you, sir. And then, you know, honestly, I'm not going to sit here and say, what the hell are the Ravens doing? They don't know what the hell they're doing. I mean, they have to know if teams are getting on their tendencies. They have to see it. They have to know. I mean, Harbaugh did not fall off a turnip truck, nor did Greg Roman. And I'm sure they might be hearing that saying, okay, so if they're saying run pass, maybe this can't be the first that they're sensing this sort of thing.
Yeah, let's mix it up. I was reading some of the comments yesterday, though. Ravens fans have seen this all year. They
smell something is up.
Right.
And that's the reason why I asked the question of Lamar to start was a simple sort of open-ended question. Like, it doesn't seem to be coming as easy. Football's hard.
Very.
But when it looks easy, there's a reason for it, because there's a supremely talented quarterback operating at the controls of an offense that hasn't been seen in the NFL in a pass-happy league where somebody's going to come and hit you in the mouth. You know, the 49ers took that to the Super Bowl last year, and the Ravens took it to the one seed. And the problem, I think the difference is the 49ers had a defensive line with a defensive player of the year on it, filled with a bunch of stout run stuffers and pass rushers that was fortunate, I guess, to not have to see Derrick Henry like the Ravens did.
You went high there.
I did, but because I'm trying to, you know, basically say I think the 49ers would have handled Tennessee better than the Ravens and the Patriots did. But I will say that the Ravens hit the crap out of their defensive line in the postseason, in the following offseason, and they hit it again with Yannick Ngakoue a couple of weeks ago for a reason. For a reason. And so maybe, just maybe, after that first half of a season and full MVP season that coming into this year, that, as Rod Woodson once told me, and I don't know if you're aware, he's an outstanding defensive football player in his day.
I've heard of him.
Rod Woodson told me that the organism that adjusts the most in the NFL is a defensive coordinator. No organism adjusts faster than a defensive coordinator in the NFL. And you give a year and a half of Lamar on film, and if there's nothing that's been switched up significantly, again, I'm not an all-22 guy. That's part of the reason why we've got Greg Cosell first up. He's an all-22 guy. I'm wondering if any of this is seen on tape. And then, of course, as you know, Greg wasn't very high on Tua coming in. He was more of a Burrow guy coming in. And now you got Burrow, Tua, and Herbert, the top quarterbacks, the first half of the top six, is just looking terrific. Joining us from Augusta National. That is from where College Game Day emanates this Saturday. He's already there at Augusta National.
Oh.
So we'll talk college football with Desmond Howard. The Miz, who's Cleveland Browns, I just mentioned, he will be joining us, Miz and Mrs. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. With Together Mode, you can bring everyone together in one space in the same virtual room. You can bring the power of true collaboration to your projects with Whiteboard, drawing, sharing, and building ideas in real time, all on the same page. And with large gallery view, you can see more of your team all at once with up to 49 people on screen, all at the same time. You can even raise your hand virtually so everyone can be seen and heard. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. So as always, we take it from DP and take you to a BFA right here on the RAS. Does that make sense? Dan Patrick Show, Rich Eisen Show, Brother from Another, then PFTPM, and then we do it all again the next day with Pro Football Talk. That's how NBC Sports on Peacock rolls every single day. Greg Cosell from NFL Films will be joining us in a matter of moments here on the program. Ed Reed and Jerome Bettis were the grind correspondents last night.
Nice.
Just working with NFL Films every week
That's
on
so
the grind
cool.
on Epics is truly just amazing. They are amazing. They really are. And some of the footage that they get is it's the envy of the rest of everybody.
NFL Films, man.
I know that. Desmond Howard, The Miz, Michael Smith, and you. Our poll question is a quite simple one, right, Christopher?
Yeah, it's up at Rich Eisen Show. Who's the midseason MVP?
Okay, back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Chris Brockman. Before we get to Greg Cosell, the senior producer of NFL Films, read off the poll question that everyone can get at Rich Eisen Show.
Yeah, midseason awards, guys. Who's the NFL MVP at the midseason point? Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're probably leaving some people out, and that's what I guess our phone lines are 484-4204-RICH, number to dial. But joining us right here back on the Rich Eisen Show, it's been about a month, so it's been too long. Senior producer at NFL Films, who is outstanding at evaluating talent as well as those during the season after looking at some film. He's Greg Cosell. How are you, Greg?
Rich, great to be with you, and I love what you said about NFL Films. Since
it's the truth.
You may not know, I'm the longest tenured employee in the company, so it was very nice to hear what you said.
You are, I know you are, Greg, and it's the truth, man. It's the truth. And I get emotional every time I think of Steve Sable, every time I hear his voice, as I will tonight on the Hallmark before the Thursday night football game, certainly because, you know, I'm a good teammate, so I watch it on NFL Network, and I just hear his voice. When did you first meet him? When did you? I didn't think we'd start here.
This is my 41st season, Rich.
41.
So I've been with the NFL for literally 40% of the NFL's existence. So this is my 41st season at film. So I met Steve when I interviewed back. Let's see, I started on July 23rd, 1979. So I probably met him in May or June of 1979.
No kidding. And so what was your first gig there?
Well, back then, it was a much smaller company, so for the first year or so, you basically were in training. So you just, you know, it was a different world, obviously, in 1979. So you were in training for a year or so, and then for my first number of years, I worked on, we did the game of the week. We had something called the Army Monday Night Game, which was about a 10-minute breakdown of the Monday Night Game that we did, and I worked on those, and you worked all night on those. That was sort of your starting point. So I'd be up all Sunday night and all Monday night. And that's kind of how I started out during my first season.
Well, I mean, and did you just like walk down the hallway and there was Facenda in the break room or something like that? Or what do you
It's funny you mentioned Facenda because I was the last person to work with John before he passed away. We actually had to go to his house out in suburban Philadelphia.
Right.
And he was the greatest guy. I don't know if you ever got a chance to meet him. You're a little younger than I am, Rich, but, he was just an unbelievable guy, and he would always say, "You gave me a great horse to ride."
I would make that my ringtone if the generations actually lined up technologically. That would you gave me.
I was fortunate to hear that once or twice, so that made me feel really good because I was young in my career and he was the master. You know, because that was back in the day when local news was different. I mean, John Facenda was the Walter Cronkite of Philadelphia News.
Right, you gave me a great horse to ride. That's fantastic, Greg. Oh, man. So, all right, let's get to the here and now here. I don't know if it's feasible for you to answer this, but I'll ask it anyway, because the story that came out of yesterday's show that so many people are talking about right now is the answer that Lamar Jackson gave me yesterday when I asked him, you know, why are things not coming as easy for you? It doesn't look it's coming as easy for you. And part of his answer was he says that the defense is calling out a lot of their plays. Does that look like something you're seeing on film or tape?
Well, that I certainly can't speak to because I don't know the answer to that, but here's what I will tell you. Last year was obviously Lamar Jackson's first year as a starter, and Greg Roman and staff were very creative and innovative in their run game concepts. They took basic run game concepts, Rich, and they blocked them in different and creative ways. So what did teams do all this offseason, particularly division teams, but certainly when the schedule came out, every team that was on the Ravens' schedule, and unfortunately, because of the pandemic, I bet coaches had even more time to do this kind of work. So what they do is they figure out how to defend this. They figure out keys. They figure out looks. They figure out the things coaches deal with on pretty much a daily basis. And then what you have to do as an offense is you then have to adjust yourself. And I can only speak to the film, but I will tell you this based on film, and I've spoken to other people about this, that right now their pass game, which is something they're going to need to improve to get where they want to go, their pass game is pretty limited. And when I say limited, I mean in terms of the pass game concepts. You could even use the word remedial at this point, which is a word that's been used to me, and clearly the film shows that. So I think they're at the point where they now need to make some adjustments and figure things out. They'll always have games where they do really well because Lamar is a freakish athlete and we know how well he can run.
Right.
And there are certain things they can set up, but they're going to have to expand their pass game to get to where they want to go.
So would you view the acquisition of Dez Bryant being something that the coaches clearly see what you're talking about too? I mean, again, John Harbaugh's a coach of the year.
No question.
On his resume.
No, John's
so,
great.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's not like we're probably telling any tales out of school about what they see themselves. I'm just wondering if Dez is an answer, because any Ravens fan out there that would hear you say this might say, then what is the answer? How do you become less remedial in the middle of an NFL season?
Well, it also comes down to concepts. I mean, it's always good to have better players, no question. But I think it also comes down to what they do in terms of their pass game concepts. Because, look, they drafted Marquise Brown a couple of years ago, and here was the thought process. The thought process was that teams will play Lamar Jackson in the run game with extra people in the box so that they will almost always play with a single high safety. And you'll get a speedster like Marquise Brown, and on the outside what happens is he gets one-on-one and he can run by people, and you'll create big plays in the passing game. We haven't really seen that kind of offense. So it's not just a matter of getting better players. Let's assume Dez Bryant is at his absolute best. He's a very good receiver, but it's how he is used within the context of their offense.
So last one for you on this then, Greg, is can you see, you've watched enough film and tape of your entire existence, can you see something where you're like, okay, it sure looks like the defense knew what was coming? Or sensed it? Can you see something like that?
Again, that's hard to answer. You know, I would just in some ways reiterate what I said. I think that defenses have a better feel for the concepts that they're running, and they need an expansion now. They need to build off their concepts, which, by the way, all good offenses over time do.
Yes.
Every offense has foundational concepts. It's how you get to them, and it's how you build off of them. That's what really good offense is about, because there's not 1,000 concepts, Rich. You know, it's just like people, you know, think that, oh, there's 1,000 pass game concepts. No, there's not. But it's how you get to them and how you build off of them.
Greg Cosell, senior producer of NFL Films, the longest tenure at NFL Films, joining me right here on the Rich Eisen Show. What does Tua's first two games tell you?
Well, I thought that this week was just a phenomenal job by Chan Gailey. Tua is a certain kind of player. I think we've had this conversation. He's incredibly rhythmic. He's got really quick feet on his drop and set. The ball comes out quick. He's got very good ball placement in the short to intermediate area. He's got good movement in terms of designed movement. And I think that what we saw last week was Chan Gailey just doing such a good job of playing to all those strengths. It seemed like almost every throw that Tua made last week, he hit that back foot and the ball came out. So when that happens, that means that the reads are defined and the throws are defined. Now, that can't happen every throw every week. So that'll be the next step. But last week, it was just, it looked really good. He was incredibly rhythmic.
So far, again, looking at what we've seen, it does appear that the coordinator in Miami knows the quarterback who seems comfortable with the offensive coordinator calling what he's calling for him. Just that's what it looks like. It looks like there is a match, and that this quarterback who has a ton of talent and upside has a coordinator that gets it. That's what you're saying.
Well, maybe I'm old school, Rich, probably because I'm old, you know?
Right.
I think about the Eagles lyric, you know, half the distance takes me twice as long. That's where I am right now. But I'm a believer in coaching. You know, and I think that coaching is really important, especially important at the quarterback position, because the reality is there's very few transcendent talents at the quarterback position. Mahomes is one of those guys. Rodgers is. But there's not 50 guys with transcendent talent at the quarterback position. So quarterbacks need to be schemed, and that's not a negative. That's not saying something bad. A lot of people think that's saying something bad, and you're ripping a quarterback. Tua has a particular skill set and a particular set of traits. Those particular traits he has at a high level, but you have to play to those traits.
No, there's no question about it because, you know, Greg, we've had conversations on this show, and you could see it in many other places too. I mean, it's not just indicative of here, but the number of talented players who have come out of college, and then there's a merry-go-round either at the head coaching spot or the front office or the coordinator position, and it takes a forever and a day for somebody to get in the right spot. And, you know, Miami hasn't been known for having the right people in place for the talent that they have been ready to have to maybe fill the role of Dan Marino. So that's why I'm trying to drill down here because,
right.
You know, the name Chan Gailey certainly in Dallas, certainly with Jets fans, that wouldn't be the guy that you'd say, you know, we got to get Chan Gailey for Tua. You know, we got to get that guy. So that's where I'm wondering, you know, about it. And you're saying, essentially, so far, this is a match, what you're seeing.
Yeah, I think he's been doing this a long time.
I know.
People can debate coaches, but he's been doing this a long time. And I think, first of all, I think Tua's traits are evident. In other words, I don't think people struggle to figure out what he is. I think it's very clear as to what his traits are and what his skill set is. I don't think you'd get differing opinions on what he is.
Now we're going to see him on the same field, albeit not against each other, Greg Cosell on the Rich Eisen Show, against Justin Herbert, who looks phenomenal. I'm wondering,
yep.
You going all 22 with this kid. We haven't seen the Chargers get rid of the jinx that seems to be still over this franchise, certainly at end of games. But what are you seeing in Herbert so far?
I've been very, very impressed, and I was one guy that thought that there might be some issues in him transitioning to the league early, but I think that he's been very impressive, and there's a couple of things to me that really stand out. Number one, he's a turn-it-loose quarterback. He is an aggressive thrower, and I always believe in the NFL, to play at a high level at quarterback, you have to turn it loose. Now, obviously, there's game situations, different game situations dictate throws, but for the most part in the NFL, you're going to have to make throws, and you're going to have to turn it loose, and you're going to have to be aggressive, and you're going to have to make stick throws into tight windows. And this kid, it's in his DNA. This kid turns it loose. And I think he's been probably more accurate than I would have thought based on his college tape, more consistently accurate. You know, he'll miss one or two, all quarterbacks do, but for the most part, his ball placement has been pretty precise. And I think that he's thrown, and again, this is where coaching comes in, I think he's thrown with a pretty good sense of timing and anticipation, which is something that did not necessarily stand out in his college tape. So my guess is he's been coached extremely well, that he's probably extremely receptive to coaching, but he's and he's, again, it goes without saying, he's a very high-level talent. I mean, I've spoken to some people who think he's just as, if not more talented than Trevor Lawrence, and we know that Trevor Lawrence is being spoken about as a generational talent. So, and I'm not one of those people that talks like that, Rich, because I think you have to wait till guys play in the NFL to make those kinds of statements, but he's a highly, highly talented guy.
Wow. I mean, that is, in terms of evaluating a young quarterback, quite a name to throw out there. And I know Trevor Lawrence is on everyone's mind in the New York metropolitan area. I want to put a pin in that for a second, however.
Please.
No. I'm going to go there, though. And I want to talk to you about Baker Mayfield, a 5-3 quarterback coming off of a bye week. Kevin Stefanski saying today, and I want to get this quote correctly, quote, I think he's ready to ascend. What are you seeing out of Mayfield that might be different because he's with Stefanski in this offense over the last 8 weeks? What are you seeing?
Another perfect example of coaching being critical and scheme helping a quarterback. Mayfield is a quarterback that needs, and this again is not a negative, he needs the system to rein him in. He needs the system to define the reads and the throws for him. He needs the system to play to his strengths. At his best, he is a guy with very good ball placement. He's rhythmic. That's the way he played at Oklahoma. He's got very quick feet. He's got a compact delivery. He needs to play within the structure of a system. And Stefanski's system does that. It's highly based on play action boot. Play action and play action boot define reads and throws, and you allow your quarterback to play that way. And that's absolutely critical. So Stefanski is probably seeing that. He's probably seeing him grow each week within the concepts that they teach. And the key is ball placement. When he had that great game against Cincinnati a few weeks ago, when the numbers were phenomenal, he was so precise with his ball placement, you know, beginning all middle of second quarter. That's the kind of quarterback he must be.
And that's going to be a big game, obviously, for Cleveland, a so-called winnable game against Houston this week. They could go to 6-3. Now, Len, let's get to I'm going to unpin the Trevor Lawrence conversation here, Greg. And again, I know, look, I'm not going to ask you to evaluate Trevor Lawrence as an NFL talent. I'm going to flip it a little bit right here. Because we've been talking a lot about scheme fit, and coaches can take a player that has yet to blossom professionally with a ton of talent. That the right scheme, right fit is the thing that can unlock success for a player. Give me a scheme that fits Sam Darnold across the NFL that a team might raise their hand and say, let's take Sam off the Jets' hands.
Way. You know, the word talent is thrown around a lot with quarterbacks.
Yes.
And no one defines what that means, Rich. You know, Sam Darnold has very poor lower body mechanics, and he's not consistently accurate. Okay? So would that, if I told you that, would your immediate response be, that makes him a great talent?
No, it would not, Greg. But it would also say that he hasn't had the right coaching to tell him, fix this, fix that, or he doesn't have the right confidence level because the scheme doesn't fit.
Do we know that? Do we know how he's coached on a daily basis? We're looking at the results.
Right.
When we have access to the results, we automatically think we know the process. We don't know the process. We don't know how he's coached every day. We're responding to the fact that a larger majority thinks that he's a super talent, and because he's not playing to that level, that it automatically must mean that he's being coached badly. That's basically where we stand. And for whatever reason, and I don't get into this stuff.
I know you don't.
You're on every day, so you have to talk about these kinds of things. For whatever reason, Adam Gase is a whipping boy. So I don't know how he's coached on a daily basis. None of us do. We're not there.
So, but you're not seeing some sort of maturation for somebody who came in with enough talent to be a third overall selection in the NFL draft.
I think Sam Darnold, to be a good player in this league, needs... And again, maybe he's getting this and not responding. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But I think he needs hard coaching. I think he needs his mechanics to really be cleaned up. I think that he needs to be much more efficient in the pocket. I think there's things that can be worked. These are all correctable, by the way, what I'm saying to you.
Yes.
I'm not saying that he can't be a good player. All I'm saying is that the assumption that he himself is great and that therefore he's being brought down by everybody around him, we know none of that.
Last one for you, Greg. I'm sure you blanch at the statement that you hear after a team gets blown out, just throw the tape out, just bury the film, don't look at it. I'm sure
you're talking about the Bucs now.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. What's to be gleaned from that boat racing that we saw on Sunday night?
Well, which side of the ball do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about the Bucs then, I guess, since they're my pick to win the Super Bowl preseason, and what I saw was just so beyond the pale in terms of everything. What do you take out of that if you're Tampa or the rest of the league? I guess
we'll start with their defense because I think they didn't do what everybody expected them to do because they'd been a team that had blitzed a lot and that played a lot of man coverage. Now, there's a philosophy, and this is now a philosophy issue. There's a philosophy among many coaches, because I've spoken to coaches, that when you play an offense that's incredibly rhythmic and the ball comes out of the quarterback's hands really quickly, as is the case with Drew Brees, there's a belief that you don't blitz those quarterbacks because you're wasting a player, that you're not going to get there. The second point I would make is this. The Saints played a lot out of base personnel, which put the Bucs in their base personnel defense. And most pressure schemes in the NFL do not come out of base personnel. They come out of what we call sub, meaning five defensive backs, six defensive backs. So the Saints knew going in that, hey, the ball's going to come out quick with Drew, and we're going to play in base personnel, and we're probably going to limit and minimize the pressure we get because teams don't pressure in those situations. So, again, it's easy on the outside to say they should have blitzed, but this is tactical football. On the other side of the ball, I would say that the Bucs O-line had a poor performance. I would say that Brady was under a lot of duress. It was the cumulative effect of pressure. Every quarterback starts to play faster when there's pressure. The first play of the game, they called a play in which they liked the matchup. They put Godwin in motion. They got him in the slot versus Gardner Johnson on an out route. I'm sure they loved the matchup. And Jordan bull rushed the rookie tackle Wirfs right back into Brady. And that sort of set the standard for the game. And they couldn't attack man coverage. They couldn't get open versus man coverage. And Brady was under constant duress.
See, and I love taking the daily narrative in shows like this one, as you referred to that moments ago, Greg, and taking the narrative that we discuss and plug it into the hard-bitten world of X's and O's and all 22. What about the sense that Antonio Brown is just the latest shiny fantasy football object being thrown into the mix in the middle of a season of a team that looks like a fantasy team thrown together? Is there a sense that that's now an issue too, that it's going to take some time for this to gel? What did the tape tell you on that front?
Well, you know, I thought he looked pretty good the way he moved. They actually called a shot play to him when they were deep in their own territory. I think it might have been their third possession. And actually, it was a poor throw by Brady. Brady had a chance to take him across the field and give him an opportunity to make a catch. But again, Brady was under duress, had a move. And then when Brady moves, he can't throw the ball deep down the field the way he used to. So that was an opportunity for a big play, and it didn't come about. But certainly Antonio Brown, I thought he looked very spry, very light on his feet. We'll see how this goes. We know that sometimes when good teams have outings like this, that they come back and they come back very strong. This is a good football team with a lot of good players. They're not going to fall apart. They just had a really bad outing, both tactically and individual performance-wise.
Greg, you're the best, man. Let's do this. Let's do this right around Thanksgiving, right around, I guess, the three-quarter post mark, and revisit all of these subjects. Truly appreciate the time.
Rich, I really appreciate it. Thank you, my friend.
You got it. At Greg Cosell. Follow him on Twitter. I do. It's a great follow. He's a great follow. I just love he, you know, again, interviewing somebody like Greg, you can't shade into the line of opinion.
Right.
Unless it's an opinion that can be based on what he's seeing with his own two eyes on the tape. Right? I'm not going to ask him a poll question. Who's the MVP? Right? No, you see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, do you think that the Ravens are really having their plays called by the opposition before Lamar snaps it? Well, it's got, what are you seeing on film? Because that's it. Well, man, the Bucs defense looked like garbage. Well, the reason why they might have looked like that is because the way that the Saints were operating offensively put the Bucs in the base defense from which they don't usually do a lot of their pressure schemes. And that's the way that Sean Payton dialed it up in advance with his scheme, and Brady was under duress while Breeze had his scheme the way that he wanted it and executed it perfectly. And that's the story of the game. I mean, that's the sort of X's and O's all 22 I like to say and have brought to your attention here. One last thing, and I'll throw it a break. Sometimes I don't like the answer from Greg. And here's the answer I don't like from Greg, is the sense that Sam Darnold is being coached properly and he's not taking the proper coaching and turning it into efficient play, because what that means is his trade value isn't going to be nearly as good as I hope it is. And I will not accept that. The Jets have broken Sam Darnold, and I believe that to my core. I will not believe that Sam Darnold is broken. Inability to take in the coaching of the current staff. I will not accept that.
I'm seeing ghosts.
I will not accept that.
Can you accept that maybe Sam Darnold's just not?
Hey!
Do it, Brockman. Give me a bourbon.
No. I won't accept that.
Okay.
I won't accept that. Not ready to accept that.
Rich, Tiger Woods update after the break.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live. Drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We'll take your phone calls to the Masters. We'll give you an update on that in a quick second. YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show, as well as right here on Peacock. If you miss any part of our show, you can catch it right there as soon as it's over. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. I've got my Masters leaderboard up here in front of me. So while I'm interviewing Greg Cosell, I'm watching Lee Westwood just torch it, 5 under as he makes the turn today. So that's a name that we're familiar. Paul Casey right behind him.
Yep. Paul Casey's been playing great.
He went
year.
Off the back, which is why he's through 7 with the old asterisk. We got a Webb Simpson situation, 3 under.
Yep.
And then a whole host of players at 2 under, but one name just jumps right at you, just jumps off and just grabs you by the lapels. And his name is one Eldrick Tiger Woods.
About to be 3 under. Rich.
Is he really? What's going on over there?
Tee shot at 16. He knows how to play that hole. Hits the slope just so right. Inches from an ace.
Are you serious?
He's got a tap in birdie at 16.
Now, he didn't skip it over the water, right? It
was
just land on the green.
Regular shot. Probably a 9 iron.
So he's about to go 3 under.
Tigers.
Oh, man.
And if you remember, final round. 2019.
Yes.
Birdie's 13, birdie's 15, birdie's 16. First round today, birdie's on 13, birdie's on 15, birdie's on 16.
So he
is 6 under on those three holes.
So he birdied both par fives.
Birdied both par fives on the back.
And now it's about to just tap in.
And tap in birdie on 16.
Is it fair to start Tiger on the back?
No, not really.
Don't you think? I mean, you start Tiger on the back at Augusta.
He knows how to play the back.
Now, could you, for someone like me, who, as you obviously see every day, I'm not that much in the golf. What does that mean for those of us when you start Tiger on the back?
So in a tournament where they need to get people moving and through, certainly when there's going to be issues with sundown and light as well as
weather, potentially,
you split the field up. Half starts on hole one like normal, and the other half starts on hole 10. So you can get people moving through and get them going all on the course. Because if you had to wait for everyone to tee off and play 1 through 18, it would be – it's you can't.
Now, why is it Tiger thing in the back, though?
I guess he just drew the straw that his group started on the back. Yeah, they started on 10. So he's going to play 10 through 18 and then 1 through 9 and then walk off the course and he's done.
And is there some type of advantage
to
that?
Well, just for Tiger, TJ, those are holes that he has traditionally – just lit up.
Good eats.
Okay. Yeah.
Good eats. Yeah, good eats. Good eats. Right.
Easy par fives on 13 and 15.
Yeah.
And then 16, it's that short par three.
Right. And it also helps that, he goes off early today and you also see him on some of the most famous holes to just get your, wet your beak a little bit as a.
I mean, Amen Corner. And,
right. And no, just so you are aware as well, no golf tournament makes you want to play golf yourself more than this one.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean,
that.
We could watch the U.S. Open or PGA or the Open Championship or any of them. Obviously, all of the Players' Championship, there are some great tournaments with some great fields. But nothing makes you want to say, when can I play golf next than watching the Masters? I do not know why. It is beautiful. It's a beautiful course. It's so pleasing to the eye. And it is also the only golf tournament year in, year out, that is a major that's played at the same place. Everything else rotates.
Yep, everything else
rotates. This is like, the Masters is at this golf course.
It's Augusta.
So it, in the same way that you talk about a longtime broadcaster feeling like a member of your family, like this course has that feel to it. Like you're welcoming this course and this tournament back into your household, and each hole has its own piece of the memory book, and each hole has its own personality and different personalities that have finished on it. Everything about this tournament is friggin' amazing.
And you know music.
And you know what types of shots each player has to hit on each hole them a chance to score.
Well, unless somebody like Bryson DeChambeau comes along and has the game that can totally change all of that. Where is he?
He's
right
back
now
to even.
Okay.
But he is struggling. He is spraying it all over the place, like us at a Muni right now.
No way. Yeah. Come on.
He's
now
all over the place.
But he's at even, though. So
he got back to even.
It's all that matters.
He got back to even.
You know, where's Lanto? Where's our guy Lanto Calrissian? Lanto Griffin.
He's still on Alderaan.
Who was a name that Van Pelt dropped yesterday, just as somebody from way back in the field who has a shot here. What do we got, Lamp? You got trouble even finding him? That's no good.
That's our guy.
Our guy from Mount Shasta, California.
Lanto's even through seven.
Hey! Lanto Griffin and Bryson DeChambeau are in the same boat right now.
Yep.
That's great.
And DeChambeau just hit it in the rough again.
Oh, my word.
I do think it's awesome. We've been talking about DeChambeau for months now. And
for good reason, though.
Yeah, and he has been the big story heading into the Masters.
For good reason.
While Tiger is the defending champ, and he's kind of an afterthought, and now Tiger's in the top five.
He sure is, baby. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. It really is. Name an iconic venue in sports. This is number one for golf. Number one. It really is.
Good one. Rose Bowl?
No. Well, just in other sports?
Yeah, just other sports.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Other sports.
Obviously Wimbledon for tennis.
Fenway,
with all
the
respect to the friends
Stadium
at Arthur Ashe.
Jerry's World for football.
No.
That doesn't count?
Motor Speedway.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, Jerry would actually say he does know what he's talking about, actually. You know?
Get your damn act together.
Get your damn act together.
They're good.
That's what he's saying to Bryson DeChambeau right now.
Patrick Reed is 2-under. Look at this leaderboard, man. Woo. Tiger. Well,
the conditions are ripe right now. The conditions are ripe. Someone's going to go super low today. And then that's
I thought it's supposed to
bar
pour rain. Is that coming
no,
in?
No, it rained all morning. Everything got pushed back 3
so
hours.
It's nice and soft.
It's nice and soft right now.
That's the way I like my golf course, by the way. You know, when I get on the tee and I start thinking about how to shape the ball and get it into a spot where I need to put it so I could land it where I want on a nice soft green.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at things. Or I'm thinking, I'm hungry. When can I get that cup of chicken salad at the turn? This is why I stink.
I want a hot dog.
Desmond Howard from Augusta is coming up an hour, too.
You'll get nothing and like it.
You know what I mean? Like, I just...
Yeah. Is the cart girl coming
around? I'm just wondering, like, if I actually did the right thing. Like, think when I stand on the tee.
Focus.
Where do I put my feet? What do I do to start my take back? What do I do when I get to the top? What do I do when I get here? And actually put it all together where I don't think about it
through.
Because I have a routine. I know because I have hit so many balls doing the same thing. And then I can think about what do I do with this dog leg? What do I do with that green that's, you know, got that false front? Like, where do I put it? I mean, literally, you want to talk about what was the planet you talked about, Lanto Calrissian being on?
Alderaan.
That's how far away I am from that. That's how far I am from that planet right now is how far my golf game is from what I just described. And I know it's got to get there. I know I've got to do it. I know what to do. I don't do it. I don't do it. I need to take a shot of Novocaine to the head and tee it up. Look at Dez. Look at that photograph of Dez. He hasn't aged a day. Looks like his prom picture. Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room. Collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.